On the January 31st edition of WINA's Best Seat in the House, Jed talked with renowned ESPN college basketball analyst Jay Billis. Jed and Jay talked about the ACC at the halfway point of the basketball season. Jay revealed why he feels the ACC could be the best conference in the nation and talked about why he feels UNC is the best team.
Welcome back on this Wednesday night. Exciting show. ACC basketball at the midpoint. Sort of gets me stirred up a little bit. Gets the butterflies going. Thinking about the NCAA tournament. Daydreaming of March. Maybe the Cavaliers can be back in the field of 65 for the first time since 2001. It also gets me fired up when we get a chance to talk ACC and NCAA basketball with our next guest on the Casales Hotline. You know him very well, the Duke graduate and now the National College Basketball Analyst for ESPN. Good to welcome back Jay Billis. Jay, good to catch up with you. I'm sure Cavalier fans and basketball fans are curious, what is Jay Billis's weekly itinerary look like in, let's say, January and February when the games are going on like crazy?
Well, it's a lot of frequent flyer miles. I'm at a game on Monday for a big Monday game, usually in the Big East, and then Tuesday and most Wednesdays I'm in the studio up in Connecticut, and then try to fly home to change my clothes and repack, and then I go to whatever college game day site we have on the weekend for Saturday. So it's a lot of travel, but it's hardly breaking rocks. It's a pretty good way to make a buck.
And the Billis family just knows, January, February, you'll be home to change out clothes, and then you're back in the suitcase, right?
Yeah, actually, they refer to it as the best time of year because I'm on the road all the time.
Well said. Rimshot. Jay Billis with us from ESPN on the Best Seat in the House. Okay, so college game day. Where do you guys venture off to this weekend?
We are at Kansas, so we've got the game that we're wrapping around is Texas A&M at Kansas at Fog Allen Fieldhouse on Saturday. So we'll Friday morning we'll be heading out there and getting all our stuff ready for Friday, and then it's basically an all-day Saturday event for us. So it's a lot of fun. It'll be a good time.
Jay, take us back to Chapel Hill a couple of weeks ago. Roy Williams presents the chocolate pudding on the set, and then Alex Bloom nails a mid-quarter. That was a fun hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, we've been doing that half-court shot for 3 years now, and nobody's hit it. And he let the thing fly, and the thing just, it went right in. It was a great time for all of us, and it was, boy, it got a lot of play. Saw it 100 times each after that, but it was great. I felt great for the kid. The funny part was he was the first person we saw when we came in that morning. We get to the set about 7 a.m., and mm-hmm. he was out there in his toga freezing and with a bunch of his buddies, and he was really the first person that we saw out of the 100-some that were there camping out and waiting to get in. It was pretty neat.
Just your typical ACC basketball fan, clad in a toga at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
In Chapel Hill.
Just what you'd expect when it's 20 degrees outside.
Absolutely. Jay Billis with us from ESPN on the Best Seat in the House on this Wednesday night. Jay, right now, at least according to the Sagarin rankings, the ACC is the number one conference in the country with 7 teams in the RPI's top 35, and that doesn't include UVA, which has 5 conference wins already. Last year, the league only got 4 teams in the NCAA tournament. Right now you're hearing maybe 6, maybe 7 bandied about. What's been the biggest difference this year compared to last year with ACC basketball?
Well, I think the teams played better in non-conference play and were able to rack up some quality wins. And, you know, I think some of the stuff about, the best conference has to do with how the bottom teams perform. I think the bottom teams in the league have gotten better. And one of the things that everybody's done a better job of is they've gotten rid of playing the ultra cupcake teams. You know, I think one of the things to keep your RPI numbers high, and the ACC is always going to be high, but is, you know, to be the number one league every year RPI wise, you've really got to be careful not to play too many games against teams that are ranked in the bottom third of Division I.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are just RPI killers, and there's nothing you can do to overcome that. So, you know, if you can minimize those games, because that's one of the reasons some of these other leagues, they've wised up and have been able to game the system a little bit and have avoided, you know, some of this RPI stuff is about who you don't play rather than who you play. And,
yeah.
and you got to avoid playing those bottom third teams to make sure that that the numbers look as good as your teams really are.
Jay, you and I talked last March about a couple of teams in particular that were on the bubble, but one of them was really on the periphery and the other was on the outside because of what you just talked about. Did Maryland and Florida State learn really difficult scheduling lessons last year?
Yeah, I think Florida State might have. Maryland's had nothing to do with their schedule. Maryland didn't get in the tournament last year because Chris McCray wasn't available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the whole thing. They were 8-8 in the league. They won 2 games in the ACC tournament. If they had Chris McCray, they would have been in. I'm convinced of that.
Okay.
But I think that the committee factored in the fact that he was arguably their best player, wasn't going to be available for the tournament. And since he had been gone, they'd had some struggles here and there. But their overall body of work suggested that they should have been in. But without him, you know, their body of work was not as good. Mm-hmm. And so they got hit because of that, and that only, in my judgment.
Okay.
You know, Florida State was a little bit of a different case. They just didn't have enough consistency, and it was just easier to ding them because you could say, well, geez, you know, they have beaten a couple of really good teams, but look at all these middling teams they lose to. And I think this year they've done a better job of beating the teams they should beat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me that's the sign. I think, well, you know, part of it is who can you beat, and the other part of it is how consistent are you, because I do think consistency is part of it, and they've shown to be a much more consistent team this year.
And Jay, I know this is Joe Lunardi's territory or domain, so I don't want to steal his thunder, but he's in, you know, bracketology central mode right now. When you think about the ACC, does a number jump into your mind in terms of number of potential NCAA bids? Do you think six? Do you think seven? What number do you lean toward right now?
You know what's funny? I don't really do that stuff. I don't get caught up in the how many teams discussion from a particular league, because I know it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
You know, you look at I think there are seven or eight teams in the league that are going to be in the discussion. I mean, obviously they're going to get a good number of teams in just because there's so many quality teams. But really, it doesn't matter. It only matters how the teams stack up relative to the rest of the country's good teams.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have the number one rated league in the country and still get only three or four teams in.
Hmm.
That's possible, because you can have really good balance throughout the league that gives you really good numbers, but you know, six or seven of your teams are just okay. You know, but they're solid, but they're not spectacular, and they're not among the 34 best teams after the automatic qualifiers are in. So, you know, I try not to get caught up in that discussion that seems to crop up every year. But how many teams does this league deserve? Because we really don't know yet.
Yeah.
And we're not going to know for real. I mean, listen, I enjoy that bracketology
stuff.
But what they do is they say, if the season ended today.
Right.
Well, the season doesn't end today. And all that stuff's going to shake out. And at the end, when we're on Selection Sunday, we're really going to be arguing over about two or three spots, and there are going to be five or six teams we're trying to fit into those two or three spots, and that's mm-hmm. going to be it. And everything else is going to be as clear as crystal
yeah.
as far as who should be in. Now, the seeding we can argue about, but who should be in, we're really only talking about two or three spots at the end of the line.
And Jay, as you just said, if we're talking about the ACC only unto itself or in a vacuum, then we're not really taking into account the relativity here, right? Conference to conference, and those are tougher comparisons.
Exactly. Like I think it's fair to say that the Big East is down this year relative to what it was last year, but that's not the measure. The measure isn't Big East this year versus last year. It's Big East versus this year versus every other league. And how many teams in that league match up favorably with the other teams, good teams around the country. And, you know, you could have the Big East down this year and still get as many teams as they got last year because the top of the league is strong. One of the reasons the Big East is having some problems is the bottom of their league is really weak.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the top teams aren't really good, because some of them are. But, you know, some of the traditional powers like UConn and Syracuse have been struggling. And that's given the impression that the league isn't as good this year.
Mm-hmm. Jay Billis with us from ESPN. Jay, a couple last minutes, a couple last things on the ACC. Carolina goes to Arizona over the weekend without Brandon Wright, without Marcus Gegnard, without Bobby Fraser, and wins by 28 points with a freshman point guard pacing them. Right now, with what Roy Williams has done with all of those talented parts, for your money, are they the best team in the country?
I've said from day one they're the best team. You know, from the beginning of the season when we first, you know, threw the balls out for the first practice in October, I think they're the best team. Now, does that mean they can't get beat or that Florida can't beat them? And, you know, if they faced off tomorrow, of course, you know, they can lose to a lot of teams. But given their depth and how talented they are, the only thing that would be a caveat to that is they're young. So, you know, youth tends to breed some inconsistency, and they might, you know, they could get clipped because of it. But I do think they're the best team, and I think that Arizona has been exposed a little bit over the last couple of weeks because they don't guard anybody. And you guys saw them, you know, up in Charlottesville when they opened that beautiful building you got there, and what that game was in the 90s too. I mean,
yeah.
You know, they allow you to score, and they just try to outscore you. You know, they try to score as many points as they can, obviously, but they're not in the mindset to stop what you're doing. They just want to do what they do better than you do. And so Arizona's been exposed a little bit. They're still really talented. They can still put it together and make a decent run. But I don't consider them to be as quality a basketball team as I do the top three or four teams. You know, the Teams like Carolina, Florida, Wisconsin, UCLA, right. That group.
I guess the key word is guarding or defense. And a team tomorrow night at the John Paul Jones Arena that will certainly guard you airtight, probably the tightest the Cavaliers have been guarded man-to-man all year, the Duke Blue Devils. Jay, just tell us about the job Mike Krzyzewski has done with this group, because it's not a group of McGettys and Brands and Averys and Langdons. How does he have this team playing so well at this point?
You know, I think you put your finger on it. They're very good defensively, and they really do get out, and they clog up passing lanes. They pressure the ball pretty well. They're decent shot blockers. They challenge shots, and they're pretty good at cleaning up misses. Not great. They give up some offensive rebounds, and always have, because they pressure so much. But they're pretty good. Their first shot defense is very good. They're not the type of team that's going to force, you know, a bunch of turnovers, but they're very disruptive. And they have to be, really, because they're not as explosive offensively as they've been in the past. They don't really score a lot of points, and they don't have as many possessions this year in a game. Like, Carolina has a lot of possessions in a basketball game, so they can turn the ball over more and still absorb it because they have so many more possessions. Duke doesn't have that. I still think they're a very good team, but they're vulnerable and they're beatable, which you could probably argue in the past few years they haven't been as beatable as they are this year. But if you're not ready to make the tough plays, they're going to win. They're really, really good defensively and give themselves a chance to win. They believe they can win. I still think there's an element out there where some teams that they have played are playing the jersey instead of playing the guy that's in it.
Psychology.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, mm-hmm. It's hard. Yeah, that's been true of UCLA teams of the past or Carolina, you name it.
Right.
When maybe they're not as tough, you still, what is it, Notre Dame, you know, sort of the echoes, you still hear the footsteps and all that. I think that's a factor, not a big one, but it's a factor you can recognize.
Yeah, we'll see if the Cavaliers can quiet those Duke echoes tomorrow night at 9:00 at the JPJ. ESPN national college basketball analyst Jay Billis with us on the Wednesday edition of the Best Seat of the House. Jay, great to catch up. You guys enjoy Lawrence, Kansas, and hopefully there won't be any guys in togas at 6 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. We don't need to be seeing that.
I'll see you soon. Thanks as always, Jay.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Take care. Jay Billis with us on the Casellas Hotline on the Best Seat in the House. I mean this in a good way. I get nervous doing interviews with that guy. He's so darn smart. He's a cool dude. He's the best guy in the craft. And I think it's nerve just because when you want to talk ACC basketball, when you want to get the butterflies going and really realize the spirit of why this is the great conference and why this is the great game, college basketball, Jay Billis, he wakes up the echoes for me.
Mm-hmm.
He wakes up the ACC basketball echoes.
Well, and he's one of those kind of, I don't know if it's necessarily a realist, but he's a guy who's going week to week with every league, week to week, particularly with the ACC. He's not looking, he's not looking down the line like a lot of guys are. He's looking game to game. He's looking at, you know, first shot defense, as he was talking about with Duke. He's that kind of guy. He's
he can
not
break
a
it down analytically,
right.
Not just bracketology. And he's right. For us to do what we're doing now is probably foolhardy.
Yeah,
it's
fine.
It's
whatever.
Just fun. The fans love it, and we're fans. That's why we do it. 977-1070, 1-800-688-9462. We got a big old thesis statement and a lot of theories on ACC basketball officiating and winning or losing games on the road that we better get to immediately. So we'll do that on the other side of this timeout. Then John Clockerty, supervisor of ACC officials at 7:05. A stacked deck, the Wednesday ACC Hoops edition of the Best Seat.